Welcome to the Match Startup Podcast. This is a very, very special episode. I say this every episode, but I don't think I'll ever stop. I think South Africa is very, very fortunate to have the entrepreneurs that it has and the people that it has that are constantly looking to build out organizations that can matter, organizations that do something that is amazing and something that really has impact for the future, right? And today's episode is with someone that's done exactly that in fashion and retail in a really, really big way. And I think it's someone that I've really wanted to talk to for a very long time, and I'm really excited for this conversation. Welcome, Inga.
Thanks, Mash. And I'm a big fan of your podcast, actually.
Yes, you do put pressure on me to release episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on Twitter, I'm like, Mash, where's the podcast? That's what you should be doing. Where is the podcast, you know?
Well, I have like 5 other jobs.
And, you know, it's even worse when my wife will be talking to me, you know, like, because I sit there with my wife and listen to your podcast. And my wife like, hey, Inga, where's Mesh's podcast? I was like, I don't know. You know, like, let me call Mesh. You know, it's not nice when the wife would be asking you the questions. You know, applying pressure on me. So I need to apply pressure on you, basically.
No, man. I appreciate the fact that you guys are listening, and I appreciate the pressure as well.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
So let's get into your journey. I mean, where are you from? Just, like, beginning. Let's go to the very basics.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
So I'm from a place called Engqeleni in the Eastern Cape. You know, it's rural place, a village, so to say. That's where I'm from, raised by my grandmother, and later on moved to Durban to go live there with my grandfather, whom he inspired me a lot, actually. And that's where I'm from. And I did my high school in Durban, and then later on moved to Cape Town to go study design over there. So
that's a lot of different influences, like Eastern Cape, Durban, Cape Town. Mm-hmm. Where would you say you really got a passion for doing what you do now?
Honestly, I would say like the passion, it really came from the Eastern Cape, because growing up I didn't know I was a designer, but now that I think about it, I've always been a designer. So I used to like build like those little car wires, you know, like play with the mud, you know, like shape cows, you know, like with the mud and stuff like that. But because of the exposure, I remember when I was in Durban, I started watching a lot of Top Billing. You know, there was a slot there called DIY with Aiden Bennett and some other guy, but it was on Top Billing, where they used to like just build things, you know, like on the spot. And I was like, you know, I really like what these guys are doing. I wonder what is it that they study.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what they studied, basically, you know? And then I asked my grandfather. At least my grandfather was well aware of these things, because he was in the media space, you know? What did this guy study? And he said to me, graphic design, you know? But I didn't know what graphic design is, you know? But at least he had an idea of what graphic design is, you know? But it turned out that it's actually not graphic design, it's rather industrial design. That they started their background to do what they do. Then I did my research when I was in high school. I enrolled at DUT to study arts and design, which was the foundation to design, exposing you to like different design methodologies and techniques and courses, basically. And then I was told at DUT that they don't offer industrial design while I was there. They recommend that maybe I go over and study at in Cape Town. So that's when I went to Cape Town, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're studying this course, obviously, mainly because you wanted to learn more about design and stuff like that. Do you feel like it was important for your journey to have that education? Do you feel like there was a natural talent already?
I think there was a natural talent. Sorry. To begin with, but that needed to be advanced and nurtured, you know. And I'm very fortunate that I actually nurtured that myself. No one assisted me in doing so, you know, because I knew what I wanted, you know, I knew what I wanted to become, and I knew what my passion is. You know, it's always been design. You know, I knew that from the word go, from high school, in fact. You know, I didn't beat about the bush and try and impress the parents that I want to study accounting, I want to study this.
So you didn't do what the rest of us do?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. So I've always known. you know, that it will be design one way or another. What I didn't know is that which form of design. That's what the difference is. Yeah.
So when you started studying, obviously, industrial design in Cape Town, what did you already start experimenting with different products and building out sort of what would become your business now?
Not exactly. What I did not know, though, is that I'll become an entrepreneur. That part I didn't know. What I knew, though, is that I will become a designer. And I already had, like, the good set of skills, you know. I remember when I dropped out from CPET, I told my friends that they will find me in the industry. Because I felt like, without being arrogant, I was so good. So much that even my lecturers couldn't believe it, you know. Like, I thought my lecturers were just talking rubbish, you know. Like, I can do this, but you must remember, in university, it doesn't matter how good you are. You need to respect the systems. You know, it's all about the systems and the structure, because that's what, you know, school is all about. Ultimately, it's about system, structure, and discipline. Now, I lacked the discipline, you know, like to abide by the system. And therefore, I was like, you know what, I'm going to drop out. In fact, I'm going to start my own thing. So I dropped out.
And this is obviously where the entrepreneur in you is already now coming out.
Absolutely.
And rebelling.
Yeah, I just rebelled. Just, you know, like, we'll get a brief, I'll do my own thing altogether. I didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll pass me sometimes, they'll fail me sometimes. They'll fail me because I didn't follow the brief. And often I found the brief wrong. You know, I was like, I mean, you can't possibly make us, you know, design like a clock in a particular way that you want us to design it, you know? I would design it my way. So I was more rebellious, so to say, like you said, yeah.
So when does your entrepreneurial journey actually begin?
So my entrepreneurship journey began when, with a group of friends of mine, we did a clothing line called Lollipop, which was around about the same time when the t-shirts were really big, like your Makip Kip and stuff like that. And it failed.
Much like most of the t-shirt companies that started around then.
It failed before we can even enter the market properly, you know. It was just a fail. It was a fail because we were younger, you know, the egos were big, you know, like between myself and my partners then, you know, like I had two partners, you know, we're just, you know, clashing, you know, like all the time. So that's how come it failed. But we had something really good going on in as far as design is concerned, you know, and the aesthetics and everything. And then I moved to Joburg, worked there a little bit as an interior designer. I worked for like 6 months or so. I remember my ex-boss said to me, you know what, because I was so into this thing, you know, I was bringing the clients, I was doing the design, I was presenting, I was winning, you know, like all the pitches and everything like that, you know, through my designs and stuff in my presentations. And I remember my boss, Riz Riaz, he said to me, I don't think you should work for me. I think you should start your own thing. You have it in you. That's what he told me in his own words. You have it in you. Go out there. I'm not firing you, but I'd like you to resign. Go out there and start your own thing and just be great. I knew, of course, that I wouldn't start an interior design company. It's a bit intricate, you know what I mean? Like, you need like a nice pool of clientele and a good network and so forth, you know? Especially what we were specializing in, because we were specializing in there, like in residential, basically. So you need to have like a very nice pool of good high net worth individuals, you know, like in order for you to get some really good clients. Because if you don't, you won't have some good clients. So I didn't have that network, and it was going to take me longer to have that network. Moved back to Cape Town to figure out what I'm going to do, because I felt like Cape Town was, you know, like my home sort of thing. My friends were there. Everybody that I knew was there from varsity and stuff. So, yeah, that's when now I started this desire to build furniture. And then I started a company called Indalo Decor in Cape Town. So I was doing furniture there and bespoke furniture pieces and stuff like that. And I got a training from Fentech to manufacture furniture. So I was just a designer, but I didn't know how to manufacture furniture. So I was taught there for a year on how to manufacture furniture, you know, like wood, using steel, using glass, different methodologies, basically, you know, of manufacturing. And from there, what I discovered was that, you know, when a person buys a coffee table, they buy it once probably in 10 years. You don't have to buy a coffee table. It's not a frequent, frequent thing. So now the model is also not what I wanted, you know. It's not good for business, I'd say, because when a person buys, you know, like a dining table also, they buy it once and probably like once, you know, in their lives. They don't buy it frequently. So I said to myself, you know, I need to find something that can yield good results in as far as cash flow is concerned, you know, and not like once-off something, you know, like that, something that's an everyday use, you know, that's more frequent, yeah. And I was like, oh, what am I going to do now? I remember visiting the Woodstock Exchange. You know, I used to see all these Cape Town hipsters, you know, like with the leather products, you know, with the cool sunglasses, wooden sunglasses, you know, that they make. And it's like, wow, this is really cool, you know. And then I couldn't sleep after that. I was thinking, like, what can I possibly come up with, you know, like that can yield good results in as far as a good business model. And then I remember seeing sunglasses that were made out of wood. I was like, wait a minute. Why is it that there's sunglasses made out of wood, but there's no bags made out of wood?
Mm.
That's when now I started researching more and prototyping wooden bags. So I prototyped for like 4 months these wooden bags, wood with leather. And I came up with a finished product, which actually worked absolutely perfectly. And I was like, wow, this is great. And then I asked my friends, like, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? And everybody was just blown away. That's when I started thinking that I've got something good going here. I remember there was about to be Cape Town Fashion Week coming. I went over there to Cape Town Fashion Council. The then CEO was Brian Ramkilowan. And the Fashion Week was coming in less than 2 weeks. So I walked in his office. No appointment, nothing. I just have the product.
Mm.
I was carrying them like in a box. So I get there. So he was in a meeting. So it's like a glass door sort of thing. So he could see me. So I'm still speaking to the ladies. They're still attending to me. The receptionist is like, what I'm here for? And do you have an appointment and whatever? I said, no, I don't. I said that I would like to join the Cape Town Fashion Week as a member, and I understand that there's Cape Town Fashion Week coming, and therefore I'd like to showcase them. They told me that it's expensive to showcase the Yariara. I think then it was 13.5 to showcase the. I certainly don't have 13.5. All I know is I have good products. That's all. So she says to me, they'd like to see my products. Then I opened the box, put them down like that. So Brian was about to finish the interview, so he only saw like something was happening, you know.
Mm.
Then when I took out the products, I could see like he's no longer concentrating, you know, in this meeting, you know, like he's, you know, he's busy, you know, like looking what, yeah, like what's happening there, you know. And he came out, you know, and then he was saying the buys, you know, like to the people I was having a meeting to, and it was like, Jesus, man, what is this? Whose products are these? I said, these are mine. Wow, this is crazy, man. Like, do you make them? I was like, yeah, I make them. No, you know what? You're showcasing. Before I could even say anything that I'd like to showcase, you're showcasing. We're going to pay you with a designer. We're going to pay you. You pay through, like, which designer you can pay me up with and whatever. And there was a designer called Goat, you know, Gift. His clothing line was called Goat. I said, like, calls Goat. He's like, Goat, I've got a perfect designer for you. You take some images, you send them to Goat, and Goat's like, yeah, he loves the interview. In fact, please come here if you can make it this afternoon. Then Goat came through, like, he was also blown away. He started styling the following day, like, of how the whole show is going to be like and whatever. And then that's how I got in. And we showcased it at the Cape Town Fashion Week. And surprisingly, my product was the most spoken about product of the entire Fashion Week.
That's crazy.
I had like the likes of Chuswa Napa talking about it, Brian talking about it. I had so many interviews. It was just madness, you know. Mm. I couldn't believe. So that was the birth of Indalo Deco as a wooden products brand. That's how it all started.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So we're producing this podcast series in partnership with Yoko. And mainly it's about really telling the incredible stories of incredible entrepreneurs and the sort of work that they're doing. And when you think about the challenges that entrepreneurs face, the biggest thing that they really shouldn't be worried about is how to get paid. So it should be easy for small businesses to get paid, and that's why Yoko makes it simple to get a card machine and start earning fast. There are no contracts, zero monthly fees, and the Yoko point of sale app comes free with your machine. Buy yours at yoko.com. That's yoco.com. Use the promo code STARTMASH and get 500 Rand off your device. I think, like, what's incredible about your journey is really just you walking into that, you know, office and saying, you know what, I'm just going to put my products here. I don't have a plan. There's no roadmap. There's no formula here. I am going to put my products here. Let's see what that brings. I feel like we're missing that a lot lately. Like, people are waiting to have the right validation before they even make the big jumps. Like, early on, what was driving you to make those jumps and make those leaps and take those risks and just go, you know what? I have nothing to lose. I'm going to go to this guy's office. I'm going to show him this. Yes or no, whatever happens, I'm doing this.
You know, prior to that, you know, I was... I'm going to take it back a little bit. I was commissioned, you know, by the business wing of the ANC with Gavin Raj to come up with some cool furniture for the ANC Mangaung conference, you know. And when I produced these art pieces, you know, furniture pieces, so Gavin Raj came to me. So we presented to Gavin Raj because he was the head events coordinator for the event. He was like to me, you know what, Inga, this is appalling. This is terrible. Like the stuff that I designed. And he said to me words that actually changed my life without realizing. He says, you know what, Inga, you need to come up with something nice, man, you know, like something beautiful. You don't want people to say that black people design ugly things, because that's, you know, like also part of the stereotype in design, that we as black people, we design ugly things. Blow the world, you know, like just design beautiful things. So like those words got stuck with me for the rest of my design career, actually. Till the day, I always think of that. I always think of his words. So the reason why I did that, walking in there, is because I believed in this product so much, because you need to believe in your product first before anyone can believe in your product. You must be your biggest fan of your work first, so that someone else can believe that you've got something good. Because if you don't believe in your work yourself, how do you expect anyone to believe in your work if you don't believe it in yourself? So I think for me, that is very critical, you know, like you need to believe. And secondly, people have this idea of perfection is good, but without a case study, you may never know, like, if you've got a right product or not. Take what you can test, you know, and see what the feedback is, and improve from there. And listen to people's critique, you know, so that it gives you a room for improvement, you know, going forward. Otherwise, if you gotta design beautiful things and hold them back or whatever you do, the world may never see it. So you need to put it out there so that you open a room for critique and improvement, and move forward. So that's what kept me going as well, you know.
So you started initially with the wooden bags, and sort of how did that business's growth and progression, what have you learned from that journey to what you're doing now?
What I learned from the journey is, I learned quite a lot of things. I learned, number one, that it's very important to have right business partners.
Mm.
So when I did that business, a then friend of mine approached me. He's like, hey, my sister would like to invest in this business. And myself, you know, would like to get involved. I will be running, we're defining the roles now. Like, I'll be running the business and my sister is just going to be injecting the money. You'll focus on design. Okay, great. Then they injected the money. It went well. We had a store in Waterfront at the time. And then we opened another one in Bramfontein. And then that's when, like, I moved to Joburg, actually. But what I learned is, it's all good and great, you know, like, when you still have the passion, the hunger, and the dream with your partners. But when the money starts flowing in, it's a different case altogether, you know? It becomes very tricky. It becomes very tricky. So now, when the money started coming in, I saw, like, a different human being altogether.
Yeah.
And this guy was a friend of mine, you know, and a very good friend of mine since varsity. But when the money started coming in, everything that we had sort of dreamed of, you know, for the business, it just all of a sudden changed. And that frustrated me because now we had no longer sharing the same values and the same passion and the same... It was all about just money, 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 money. Money for him, rather, you know. That's when the problems began, basically. So, like, what I would say is the key thing that I've learned is, in as much as it's difficult to say, like, I want a business partner that's like A, B, and C, it's all good and great to have that at the beginning, but wait until the money comes. That will determine the future of your partnership. Because money is a source of all evil, after all. When the money is coming, you know, like, you see different personalities now, you know, and change and whatnot. However, the tricky thing is that there's no formula. You may never know because you don't have the money at the time. You may never know, like, what's going to happen, you know, when the money comes.
Yeah.
You know? So those are some of the things that I've learned. But also, like, handling some really big money, you know, like at Indalo Deco, it also opened my eyes, you know, like that actually you can do things this way, you can't do things this way, you know? So yeah, I learned such things, basically.
So you had to obviously exit that business.
Yes.
After, you know, everything that you went through. And just talk us through the journey that you've gone through to basically recreate and rebuild and pivot yourself as an entrepreneur and also as a designer and as a business as well. What's it been like completely starting over and finding a new journey and really rediscovering, you know, your passion as well?
Yeah. You know what, Mesh, I always say this, you know, like, entrepreneurship is the way of life, really. It's not transactional necessarily, you know, because if it was transactional, think about the times when you're starting out, when you don't have money, you'd immediately give up because the transaction is not happening, you know, which is what you're into. So it's the way of life, you know, with the obstacles and all these hardships that actually come your way, you still need to stand firm and believe in what you're doing. You know, whether you fail, you don't fail, you just have to keep marching on. So to answer your question is that, because I've traveled the journey before, and I believe that if you know your journey to Soweto, you won't get lost finding it again. You know, you've traveled the journey.
Yeah.
In fact, because you've traveled the journey, you may even know shortcuts to get to Soweto.
Yeah.
Actually, I can get there using this way and whatever. And, you know, you even know the shortcuts now because you've traveled the journey, you know. That's the most important thing. So for me, making a comeback, you know, like with a different brand, a different offering altogether, it was bound to happen. You know, I believed in my product and I believed in my journey and I trusted my process. And it took me a short while to get back to the game, you know, because I've traveled the road, I've been on this road before, and therefore it was less difficult. It was really difficult, but less difficult starting this brand because I knew what I was doing. I had traveled this journey before. It was just a matter of mastering it, you know, and I'm still in the process of trying to master this journey, you know, but the journey continues. But it was understanding the experience and using that experience from Indalo Deco and applying it to this business, and having looked at all the mistakes that I'd done at Indalo and never to do them on this business again. So that's what it was all about.
I mean, so your business sits at the intersection of design and retail.
Yeah.
And you've done this throughout your journey, obviously, you know, through furniture and then, you know, the wooden bags, and now, you know, amazingly premium leather goods.
Yeah.
What would you say is your assessment of the retail industry for young entrepreneurs in South Africa right now?
I'll be very frank. It's very difficult. It's tough, Mesh. It's tough. I always say this, you know, the biggest problem is not that we don't have a talented designer, and I'm not even the most talented designer for that matter, but the key thing here is access to market. You can make the most beautiful products. I mean, like, you find guys in the township making, like, the most beautiful products, but their biggest disadvantage is the access to market. It's not about making beautiful products. It's about making beautiful products for the market, and you need to find that market. But now finding that market is very expensive. It's very costly. I'm going to make an example, like a guy in Soweto who's making nice leather belts or whatever the case is. They might never actually access their market. I can tell you that right now, their market is not a person in Soweto. Their market is probably a person in Sandton. But now as to how they access the person in Sandton, that's where the trick is. It's a very costly exercise. When I say costly, is opening a shop in Sandton is ridiculously costly. Having a kiosk in Sandton is ridiculously costly. So, like, it's all costly exercise. Not to mention that the retail at the moment is not doing so well worldwide because of the economy, you know, it's not so good. People are cash strapped. So now, even if you were to open a shop, but now you still have to get used to the fact that the sales are not coming through nicely and so forth, you know, which is what we're going through as well. The retail is not doing so well. It's not just us, it's just everybody. You know, it doesn't matter who it is, you know, especially like when it comes to the sort of products we make. It's not a necessity, you know, it's just a luxury. It's, you know, a person doesn't have to buy a card holder. They can still survive with the old wallet that they have. They can still carry the same laptop bag that they have because they cash strapped, you know. The economy is not so good. So the retail in general, you know, like on a global scale, is just not doing so good. And it's not even because of online, it's just that people just don't have money. That's it.
When you think about your journey, just like all the highs and all the lows, what would you say is like been a consistent thing that you've learned and something that you feel that other entrepreneurs really need to know and understand about this journey and about what it takes to be an entrepreneur and run a business?
Oof. I think the first thing I'll say to anyone who wants to be an entrepreneur is that first things first. This is probably the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm sure you'd understand entrepreneurship as well. It's the most difficult thing. I don't think entrepreneurs, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to become an entrepreneur, never think that you want to be an entrepreneur. Don't get into it because you want to make money now. And I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs are very under pressure because a lot of people, in fact, are very under pressure to start businesses because of the lifestyle pressure. What they see on Instagram, you know, someone in Bali, someone in Dubai, someone with a Lamborghini, you know, posting and whatever. So they immediately assume that in order for me to have that lifestyle, I need to be an entrepreneur. That's where now everything goes wrong. And that is where we have like the highest failure rate of entrepreneur in South Africa. It's because people enter the space with the mindset that I want to drive a Lamborghini in the next 2 years. Yes, I'm not saying it's not possible. It's possible, but the mindset is wrong. as to why you're entering this space, you know, of entrepreneurship. So I'd advise people, anyone who wants to start a business, that it's not an easy thing. If you want to get in it because of the money, I've got bad news for you. It's not going to happen in the next 5 years or even 10 years. It's not going to happen. Not unless you're doing tenders, which is a different ball game altogether, you know. But for as long as you have a product or something, or a service, it takes time to build trust, you know, to build the network, to build the clientele, to build the product, you know, to refine the product, you know, for it to yield good results that can afford you that lifestyle that you want. And you might actually spend even more than 20 years trying to, you know, to harness the market and trying to get the return on investments. But it's not overnight, which is what a lot of people think it is. And yeah.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you.